This is Jamala Rogers, your host of Voices from the Battlefield, and we're going to do something different today. Coming up is a pre-recorded panel discussion. It was part of a series by the CUNY School of Labor and Urban Studies. The title, If You Can Keep It, comes from a quote by Ben Franklin, who, when asked what this country was, a monarchy or a republic, promptly replied, "A republic if you can keep it." Well, I say we now have an oligarchy, and we don't want it. So the panel was about an hour and a half, so you only hear an hour's worth because of the length of my show. But you can hear the full discussion by going to my website at www.jamalarogers.com. Stay sane, stay woke, and listen up. This is Jamala Rogers, and we are going to do it right. We can't have all this fussing and fighting. There's too much going on that we need to be focused on. This is Voices from the Battlefield, and we are live on Facebook today, and we still have a psychological, pathological liar in the White House. We still have a 34-count felon in the White House. And yesterday, if you all were really paying attention, this man declared war on the citizens of this country. So this he is not playing. The MAGA folks are not playing. They are on a roll. They got the momentum, and we're trying to catch up. So when he met with all the leaders of the military, he basically said the enemy is within. And so he's looking at urban areas. Even St. Louis has come into his scope. So we got some issues here that we're dealing with internally. And I keep thinking about enemies abroad. This must be a fine time for them to be plotting and thinking like these fools are going crazy over there. This might be a good time to do a little invasion or do some disruption. So we got somebody that is not only dangerous for the economy, for our democracy, but really for our security. And so now, to me, he's crossed the line, and it was a neon line to begin with, but we got to be very conscious of that. There's also Gaza, still genocide in Gaza. And so some powerful things have been happening. And so we're going to talk about that next week on the show. We got, some guests that are deeply involved in the struggle for the Palestinian state, and we're going to get some updates about that. Today, we're going to talk about us, St. Louis Public Schools. Dear to all of us on this Zoom call, we have with us Ray Cummins, who's the president of Local 420 American Federation of Teachers. He's been given that union leadership for a while. We also have Karan Johnson, who we affectionately call CJ. So you might hear us say CJ, but her given name is Karan Johnson, and she is the first African-American female to head up the state president of American Federation of Teachers. You're shaking your head no. That's not true? So you're not the first? Okay, okay. But okay, but she's doing the job, and she's standing on somebody's shoulders. that part we know is true. So, it's so much to talk about with the St. Louis Public Schools, because and Ray and I talked about this offline, that almost every media hit is negative. And so people have just tuned out. They don't want to hear about it. They talk about it's too dysfunctional. The school district is dysfunctional. The board is dysfunctional. The union is dysfunctional. But we got to make it all work, because what's at stake? Our children who are still in the public schools. And so welcome Ray and CJ to the show. And we're going to dive right on in. So my first question is, I just talked about the dictator that's in the White House. He has done his best to dismantle the Department of Education. How has that affected the St. Louis School District?
Well, I'm so happy to be here with you on your show this afternoon. What comes out of the White House is so sporadic. We really can't pin down exactly how it's going to affect us. We know it's going to have a negative effect. We heard some good news a couple of weeks ago that Title I funds had been released, but We have no idea what that's going to mean further down the line.
CJ, you have anything to add to that?
Nope. I want to also thank you for allowing us to be here, and I'm just going to keep following behind President Cummings.
Okay. So it just seems to me that even the uncertainty of that department, which generally is giving leadership in terms of, national policy and those kinds of things, as well as some funding for special programs, that you all as stakeholders and us as stakeholder citizens, because we all are, most of us are paying property tax, which helps to fund the public schools, ought to know what's going on, and we don't. And so it makes it very difficult, I think, to plan. So enough said. The uncertainty, I do believe, is intentional to keep people like confused and not being able to really plan. And to me, the St. Louis Public Schools or any public school system needs to be able to have the stability internally and externally to do the planning necessary to take care of our children. So the other thing I think we could talk about is what is going on. If you all can give us a status of the St. Louis Public Schools. People hear snippets of this and that, and they know, for example, that there was a no vote of confidence for the current superintendent. So let's talk about, like, just give a people an overview of what is going on in the public schools and what are some of the challenges, and then maybe we'll pull down a few of those and really talk about them some more deeper.
Right now, St. Louis Public Schools is at a crossroads. We had a lot of money that came in from the Biden administration through the Department of Education
Strong.
that began to put us on the right track for what's really needs to be done, what's best for the kids and the community. Following the change of administration in Washington, things are now a little bit upset and shaky. For example, when we came out of all that money that we spent before, we had what appeared to be some budget deficits short term, and then we heard some news that that wasn't necessarily the case. St. Louis Public Schools, unlike other schools in the country, is financed primarily, as you said, by property taxes. So when we don't receive funds from the state or the federal government, the majority of what we do is paid for locally, which is a good thing. But right now, we have been audited by the state and everybody else since we had a superintendent that was let go because of some alleged inappropriate financial behavior, amongst other things. Following that, we have a superintendent now who came to us along with many of the other folks that came with that previous superintendent. And she, a few days before school was to start, in a board meeting announced that we're going to have to close 37 schools. In all truth and transparency, we had talked about this previously, but to talk about it a few days before school was to start, to talk about it a few days before the same community where the majority of those school closures would happen had been devastated by that tornado in May, it was just devastating to those of us that care about the school district that you weren't talking about welcoming kids and you were spreading seeds of doubt and chaos once again for the school system. Our organization had been very patient through all of the things that were happening in the school district and tried to be very supportive. But once those and a few other things happened, and we looked at the morale of our employees in the district, we knew something needed to be done. In less than a couple of days, we were able to gather enough signatures and printed names to be a symbol for a vote of no confidence against the leadership of the present superintendent. And to get nearly 2,000 signatures is quite a feat in itself, but to be in an environment that has been described as retaliatory, from which this superintendent and past districts where she worked, as well as here, people were afraid to speak out, but nearly 2,000 people signed and printed their names because they had a list of issues that needed to be addressed. So there are actually two big things going on right now. One of them is the school closure issue. The other one is those things that we presented to the board that we saw as a problem between the union, the employees, and the present administration.
CJ, you want to add to that? Because there are a couple of those that I want to double down on in a minute.
Yeah, please. I don't want to add to it, but I do want to say that when we was talking about dysfunction earlier, and the dysfunction for in my head that I see is her not the superintendent not wanting to include all the stakeholders in these conversations that she's having. Some people fail to realize we are SLP, St. Louis Public School employees as well, President Cummins and myself. We hear a lot of them union this, union that, when in reality, they should be trying to serve their employees, because at the end of the day, that is what we are, employees representing and speaking up for other employees. And as you discussed, it's already a squatter in the White House who hate us. Elected officials in Missouri who hate us. Some leaders in St. Louis, Missouri who hate us. And when I say us, I'm referring to broke brown and black families, underserved communities, and public schools. So for her to come in and just move how she's moving, it seems like she's working on the other side. It doesn't seem like she's trying to work with President Cummins and all the other stakeholders in our community so that our students and us as educators can thrive. So I just wanted to piggyback off of that, but not add anything new.
No, I think that's illuminating, because one of the things about the leadership at the school district has been problematic for a minute. So people are wondering, and you all might not have the answers, total answers to this, because this is probably more a school board issue, but how the funds that were discovered as being missing or misspent under the previous superintendent, people are like, well, how did that happen when there's a board down there that's overseeing finances? And then, okay, now the current superintendent is a no vote of confidence. How did she get in the first place? So the public looking outside, looking in, are wondering, who is making the decision? And is the board as dysfunctional as it looks like they are? Because, like I said, the money's gone, I mean, millions of dollars. As you said, Ray, there's going to be an audit that may find out the whys and the whistles and all of that. But now you have a new superintendent that people were applauding, like, yes, yes, yes. And then you got a no vote. So people are trying to figure out what exactly is happening. Now, I know you said about the closing of the schools, but there was also an issue of the kids being put in the same buildings that may not necessarily jive correctly. And there was no discussion about that. But what else is going on with the superintendent and the board, if you can talk about that in terms of the leadership part of it and the decision-making part of it?
Well, when we turned in the signatures as a symbol of vote of no confidence, we did not ask for the superintendent to be drug out into the street and burned at the stake. We simply were letting the board know that a significant number of your employees have these particular issues with what's going on. And since that time, last month that we turned that in, we have not heard anything officially from them. And it just appears to me that any employer would be wise to sit down and talk to your employees if they're bringing to you something that they feel is significantly affecting the work that they're doing every day. And that also our employees, they love St. Louis and the community and the families. That's why one of the items that they were concerned about was the lack of empathy in this superintendent following that horrible tornado, where right now we still have people out there in tents in front of their houses, to say that we're cutting off the final lifeline. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to know where these school closures will be proposed at. They'll be proposed in the same area that they have been proposed in the past. They will talk about how this is going to save us money. We know we've done this in the past. None of those money-saving effects come about. But we do know if whatever is going to be the solution, it needs to come from the community and the stakeholders, like President Johnson said. Our goal tonight in this town hall, which has been in the previous three education summits that we have, is to help educate our community to what's going on to our schools, and then to engage them in conversation so that we can understand what it is that they are looking for and what they need. For example, we have people that say we have to make these cuts because if we don't do so, we're not using the taxpayers' money wisely. Well, I've talked to some taxpayers over the last few days that told me if a school closes across the street from them or in their neighborhood, it essentially crushes their property value, which means that for African Americans, our generational wealth is where we pass on from to other generations is through real estate. Well, that same property owner that you're saying you're trying to protect their dollars that they use to pay your salary are the same people now who you are sending their generational wealth through the toilet and also make it almost impossible for them to sell their homes. Who buys a home across from a shuttered school? This is significant. Why? Because they pay their full share of taxes just like everyone else in this town. And paying your full share means you should get your full share of the services. No area of this city should be allowed to have an education desert. We've already done it with food desert. And we have to be mindful too, a number of these neighborhoods, these schools are the only beacons of hope. The police have essentially left when we look at the crime statistics. And we know that the grocery stores have left, and people have to drive a good ways to get to nutritious foods. And the schools have been there as beacons of hope in those communities. So we want to engage in conversations with our community in order to be able to come up with some viable resolutions.
And so, CJ, I'm wondering, have you all had a conversation with the new superintendent at all?
I'll let President Cummins entertain that question.
Has this person met with the union?
Before she ascended to the superintendency, before the new board came on board, we had frequent conversations with her.
Okay.
She worked, seemed to want to work well with us. We didn't even know how to pronounce her name until she officially became the superintendent because everybody thought her name was Borchade. As soon as she became the superintendent, new board was seated, she corrected everybody then. It's Borchade and was emphatically doing it. Well, that's when things began to change.
So
No.
you're saying that once she became the official superintendent, her relationship with the union changed?
along with the change in the school board.
Okay. And why do
I
you think
mean,
that was?
well, there had been a lot of talk out there around, what was going on and change in the school board or whatever. But our philosophy has always been, people change, but whoever's the president of the union, just like whoever's the president of the board, we move along as things change. I think she bought into some of that hype. It was no secret that politically, the folks that we supported, we only one out of the folks that were on the ballot that we supported won. So a political novice would automatically assume right off the bat, well, the union doesn't have any juice. But as I said before, those political actions, they come and go, but the institutions themselves remain the same. We've been here at Local 420 serving this district for nearly 100 years. So me and the time that I've been in the district, I've seen many different superintendents and many different boards, but we have maintained our common our central mission, which is to make sure that the people that do the work, their voices are heard at the highest level of decision making.
I just, I'm thinking about regardless of the perceived strength of a stakeholder, they are still stakeholders. People might say that even the parents don't have juice because they're not as organized as they could be. So what do? Not include them, not, respect them. So I think when I look at the stakeholders of for a school, is it is the union, it is the school board, it is the parents, it is the broader community. And all of those have a deep interest and self-interest in making sure the schools work. I want to talk a little bit about, you mentioned the school closings, and we've been through this before. And I can remember having a discussion with Dr. Adams, the two soups over, when there was a closing of the school and they were asking for input, but really the schools were going to close, and they had a little survey. And so my response is, you all have hired forecasters. I say I'm not stupid. I'm not, I understand data. And I know that the school districts are losing enrollment because St. Louis is losing population. So I understand that very, very clearly. What I was trying to get him to understand is, like, you all have forecasters to know this school is not going to have the population it needs in the next 5 to 10 years. It's probably going to have to close. And knowing that kind of information, then you start looking at, what else can we do with this school? How can we repurpose it so that it doesn't become a big eyesore like so many of the abandoned public schools have? Some of them have been abandoned for decades, and now Mother Nature has taken over. But they are still, to your point, Ray, not only just the eyesore and a potential for criminal activity, but they're bringing people's property value down. And so, who wants, like you said, a big old abandoned school? And it's not going to be a small school. It's going to be a big old abandoned building, looking like Hempstead School, where they were abandoned for a long time, and then the tornado—I mean, lightning struck the roof and just burned out, imploded. I mean, it really does not serve our community well when we know, at least 30, 40 years ago, schools were an anchor. They were an anchor, and kids didn't have to go very far to get to their neighborhood school. And I'm not, again, naive to know that folks are going to have to be bused for lots of different reasons. But the buildings, what can be done with them other than just shutting them down and letting them become, I just get mad every time I pass one. I just like want to go down there. But because some of these properties have been like turned over to whoever or bought, and they just sitting there, you just don't know who to be mad with. But the current wave of schools, 36 of them, When I heard that number, I told somebody, well, hell, before we know it, it's going to only be three schools, an elementary school, a middle school, and a high school if we keep this up. So 36 schools, how are we going to absorb that? And is that realistic? And is there any way we can repurpose those schools? And lastly, I want us to fold this in because you talked about the tornado. And we had the professor at SLU say that because of the tornado, because of the neighborhoods that it hit, those people are gone. There's no housing for them. So they're not going to be here. And that includes families who went to the public schools. So we already now see another layer of impact on school population. So let's just talk about what it means for 36 schools to close. What's going to happen with the buildings? And are we going to try to bring back those families that were displaced by the tornado? And I know that's not the job of the union, but certainly advocacy is one of those for the union. So where are we with that?
Let me say this. First, I'd like to point out this problem is bigger than just the schools. St. Louis is having a mass exodus of black families out of here. They're not leaving because of poor schools. They're leaving for other reasons, which I don't want to get into right now. But I want to say that SLU demographer that you're referring to, the professor, one of the other things that he said was, we are getting ready to move from city status to town status if we don't reverse this depopulation. And so just to say that falling enrollment for the schools and the job that we have to close school buildings doesn't look at the totality of the problem that St. Louis faces today. The previous board undertook a numerous listening sessions out there. I forget what they call them, but it ended up that they had a blueprint for education in St. Louis. And some people just took it like in many other reports and threw it on the shelf because it didn't fit whatever their particular vantage point. But with that being said, we did a deep dive into it, and what the citizens, stakeholders all across lines said was that what you just alluded to, they want their buildings, because the buildings belong to them. The buildings belong to the taxpayers of this town. They want their buildings repurposed. They don't care how many kids are in the building. They want them repurposed and something done with them so that they continue to operate, even if they operate with that small number of students. This is what they have said that they want. They've also said they want community schools. They want schools that have wraparound services initially in areas where we call them failing schools or low-performing schools, because those kinds of schools always are located in areas where there's high poverty, there's low employment, there's underemployment, there's a lot of crime, drugs, a lot of general hopelessness, that those schools can become those true anchors of what they're supposed to be. I'd like to address what you were saying about bringing the students back that were displaced by the tornado. This organization begged the superintendent, dispatched to her a communique expressing the urgency that we reach out to those families and, if necessary, find temporary housing for them in the city and tell them that we love them. They are part of this city, or they're part of this SLPS family. If I heard from her, you did. It
So,
was
you know,
just
what I'm
ignored.
thinking, yeah, that's very sad. I'm wondering, because I agree with you, Ray, the public schools are part of a larger ecosystem, and they're part of a bigger landscape, and all of those interact and impact negatively or positively. So even when you think about segregated schools, you know, this is an explanation I give with people. You're gonna have segregated schools because they're segregated neighborhoods. And so if you want somebody to go into a neighborhood school and it's segregation, it's going to be segregated schools. So then you'd have to really talk about a broader vision of a city where folks were not concentrated racially or, you know, by income, and therefore that's going to impact the schools. I want to hear from CJ about this. Because if it is a bigger landscape, that means other districts are grappling with the same problems. So, have you been in touch with other state, affiliations to see what's going on with them and how you all can learn from one another to have some real impact on your locals?
Absolutely. And then I'm also working with President Cummins really close on this particular project because I have a school in Kansas City that's almost about to be going through the same thing. So we are definitely feet on the ground, and not only are we working with our community partners across the world, but we're working with each other right here in the same city in the same state. So yes, we are working together, and it's
And so what have you learned from even the initial working together in terms of similarities of attacks on public education that you all can really work together on?
The problem is our parent community is not aware and they're not active. They're, as you said, that is the problem. We have a lot of community partners. We have the churches that are willing to support. We have these people, you. We have the people that are really willing to support, but we don't have our parents. And I think this may have been one of the first times that we've actually heard parents say that they didn't even know this was happening. That's how quick she slid that in on everybody. So they're very grateful to the union for letting them know, like, this is at my doorstep. It could be me. My baby might have to go to a school across a whole nother in a whole nother area, and I don't know if my baby feels safe, or even if I feel safe with my baby might be raised around Bloods. This neighborhood might only have Crips. Even though people say they don't see these gangs, they are here, and you have to be from the community and be of the community to actually know that these things are still here. So yeah.
Yeah, I think, you said a mouthful there. You're just joining us. This is Jamala Rogers, your host of Voices from the Battlefield, and we are here with two advocates of our public schools. That's Ray Cummins, who's president of Local 420 AFT, and Karan CJ Johnson, who's the state president, and they have their hands full with all of the drama and trauma of a public school district. And ours has gone through a lot. I mean, I don't really think we ever recovered from the Biondi, the not Biondi, the Roberti, board. And he and it, it, you know, and I look at where we are, where we could have been, and I could see some flashpoints where the demoralization kicked in. People started taking their kids out of the school and taking them to either parochial, private, or charter schools because they did not see a future for the St. Louis public schools. And I know I've seen you on the TV, Ray, really talking about how can we vote the district for folks because it has such a bad rep. And what would a campaign like that look? What would it look like to have to be talking about the great things that the St. Louis Public School offers? What would that campaign look like?
Let me say this. One of the problems we're having right now is because no plan. We go down to City Hall, and I'm not jumping on this mayor or any politician down there, but they haven't had no plan down there for years. What they have done is sit down there and wait on somebody else to come with some money for us to help them achieve their dream. They haven't articulated what our dream is. We should be reaching out to people that are developers and these kind of folks, bringing them in to let them hear what our dream is and our vision is for St. Louis in the future. Land is cheap. Opportunities are here that don't exist in the suburban areas. Part of that plan has to involve the infrastructure of the school district. Right now, we have a school district that has no plan, except we're just going to close down, close down, close down until people like myself that have been here 100 years will be here to turn the lights out. We have a vision for the future, like what came out of the education plan from the previous board that we have articulated and will be articulating to the community. It's not the only alternative, but what we want people to understand is there are alternatives. Once you have various alternatives on the table, the next step is to come up with a plan. And that is what we're trying to spark with town halls and these conversations. We want to start sparking people's creativity so that we can understand what the future of St. Louis and the St. Louis Public Schools should look like. We believe if we're planning for the future to revitalize St. Louis, nobody's talking about for the future that we shouldn't be trying to repopulate. The question is how we do it. I'm an optimist that believes that we will be able to achieve it, but have to be ready at that time, both with our schools and other infrastructure in order to move forward. If we sell off all of our assets, and I keep saying our because some people don't understand these buildings belong to the taxpayers. We are the only entity that is responsible for educating children, legally responsible by the state to educate kids. Some kids are on loan to homeschool, some on loan to charter, some on loan to religious schools. I remember a couple of years ago when Imagine closed, and overnight we needed 3,000 or more seats for kids. If we hadn't had surplus buildings available, imagine what the chaos would have looked like, scrambling, trying to find a place for those kids to go to school. And I'm simply saying, you can't just only have a school to fit whatever the number of kids you have now, because heaven forbid if some catastrophe happened to some, you may overnight have to take on that heavy lifting. And that too should be part of the vision. But the bottom line is, we want to hear from the community, and we want to let the community know that there are other alternatives, and together we can achieve our goal.
CJ, I'm thinking about all the things that Ray has said. And do you think the lack of money in the district and the volatile political situation is stifling people's dreams about what the potential and possibilities are for the St. Louis Public Schools?
No, I
Because when
don't think so.
when you think about money, and knowing that it's a deficit, a huge deficit, and now they're trying to balance the books, and so they're closing schools, they're doing this, and you're thinking about a bigger kind of picture, and it's like, wait a minute, I can't do that because they're going to close that school. Is it possible that people are unable to even think about a dream when all of these other obstacles are in the way?
So I think the problem is they aren't aware of the funds that are for St. Louis Public Schools, and I'll let President Cummings elaborate on that.
Whether you've seen a copy of the report that we commissioned a couple of years ago, Good Jobs think tank, that said that over at that time over $200 million that should have came to the St. Louis Public Schools didn't because of tips and tax abatement. We've been on the phone this week talking with our folks, and just in the last year they lost an additional $39 million. When we're bringing these ideas to the table, we are fully aware of the fact that money is something that has to be there in order to finance your dreams. But we also know there is plenty of money around, it's just being directed to all the wrong places.
Think that's deliberate?
Well, I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but I know who always loses at the end. So I think, rock doesn't move unless somebody's pushing it. So we lost that $300 million or more over the last several years by somebody did something. Otherwise, the taxpayers' money would have came directly to us. That
But
kind of we.
even the TIF stuff, Ray, I was part of some of those meetings, and also saw the report, and it is millions of dollars that is not being collected. And even now, when I look at the tornado damage, and I look at some of these businesses that pretty much have abandoned the city, and we kind of let them go, and they left, just left and left stuff. And I'm thinking, like, who is going to be the one to say, okay, business A, we need to get, your TIF money, or business C, we need to get the TIF money. Is there anybody responsible for overseeing the TIF, the money, the uncollected money that could be used for the public schools?
Proud to say that the work that we've done in that area, politicians down there don't want nothing to do with TIFs. They're really stepping lightly. Matter of fact, folks that want a TIF, they come and talk to us and want to tell us about what they have planned that they could help with the school district. Well, that's the kind of conversation we want. We had a guy out here at our offices that was going to build one of these big hotels downtown, Midas or something like that. When I told him we had 3,000 to 4,000 homeless students, the grown man broke down in tears because I said, imagine your child did not have a bed to go home to tonight in safety and comfort of your house. He said, I didn't know that. I say, you've been talking to those people downtown and you didn't know? See, that's the part I'm telling you. When people come here with their dreams, we need to tell them what we're facing and what we want to do. And you're exactly right. The time is now for a rebirth and to build on what we have done in the past in innovation and to let the public schools lead the way to revitalizing this city. That's what we're in need of now. People come if you build it. I hate that's a cliche from a movie, but you can do it. We talked to some gentlemen the other day, and they told us about this data center they wanted to build. And they said, well, we got 4 million for this. We got 4 million we're gonna put over here. We got this. I said, well, look, we need 200 million in St. Louis public schools. How much of it do you want? He said, well, we'll do whatever we can. What do we need? See, nobody's talking to these people. A mill here, a mill there, a couple mills there. Before you know it, we got 200 million. There are people out there, but nobody's talking and speaking up for St. Louis the way it needs to happen.
Is there somewhere, because people don't know this and they don't know that, and that's true unless you really are following it. So, for example, folks don't know how many homeless families they are before the tornado, and we're, what happens with these kids? So once they know, they start asking questions. So I'm thinking about the layers that will have to be addressed for people to understand the full picture of the challenges facing the St. Louis Public Schools, so that they can figure out what parts of it are they enough in, passionate enough, so that they can start getting in there and doing some stuff. Because when people look at all of the things in its totality, they like it's so overwhelming, I don't know where to begin. And so when people feel like that, that's paralysis. And so then they really do nothing. And we've had too many people doing nothing. So when I think about the public schools and I think about some of these buildings, I think about how can we get community services in the same building. There are other schools that have also made temporary housing inside the school. One of the things, I was part of a committee that was looking at getting more social workers and counselors in the schools. I mean, we have kids that have been in intergenerational trauma that it's going to be hard for them to learn, but yet we put them in settings as if there's normal, and then when they act out, then we act like that's a behavior problem when really it's a symptom of trauma. And so there needs to be people right in that building who knows the kids, knows their families, and can properly address these issues. So, I just look at the building itself. Some of them are fairly new. I mean, we passed a dam bond issue some years ago for air conditioning, and some of those schools closed. I mean, wait a minute, how irresponsible is that? We put like tens of thousands of dollars for an air conditioning unit, and bam, it's closed. So, I think there needs to be an assessment of those buildings to see which ones are viable enough to move forward with some of these plans. But as you said, the communities really have to help mobilize the support for that, because that's the thing that's going to be around their neighborhood. And I look at neighborhoods like the Ville, who are right there for Sumner. You got to have that kind of passion and energy to keep this stuff going, because it's so many obstacles and so many people that don't want it to happen. Like, you can e get easily discouraged. And so, but every time I think about the kids being in the crossfire, I'm like, no, we gotta eliminate that obstacle, because that's gonna keep them from learning, from being happy to go to school. And I've had different shows about education and people from even other cities, and we talked about even what happened during COVID, the shutdown for a year, and that we never recovered from that. And so public schools, this pile on keeps happening, where it's just difficult for people to get from under that. So talk a little bit in the few minutes that we have left about what's going to happen tonight at the town hall and where it's going to be. Give people some information so we make sure they're there and they can be engaged in a deeper conversation as to what we're having now.
I didn't catch that.
I'm asking you or CJ to talk about what's going to happen tonight at the town hall at Vashon. Give people the information, tell them what to expect so that they can be fully ready to participate.
You want to start first, Miss CJ?
We are at Vashon High School, 3035 Cass Avenue, St. Louis, Missouri, 63106. Doors open at 5:30. The conversation, the community conversation, will be from 6 to 8 o'clock. We have our president of AFT, Randy Weingarten, chiming in. We have the president of Chicago's Teachers Union, Stacy Davis Gates, chiming in. And then we also have in person the wonderful Mr. Jitu Brown, National Director for Journey for Justice Alliance, J4J, Chicago, Illinois, amongst this amazing President Cummings right here that can probably have been here longer than all of us probably have been and started school. So we have all of these great minds coming together and with a plan. President Cummings and Local 420 has a plan. As he always says, this plan is not set in stone. That's why it's a community project. So we are bringing a plan amongst listening to the community, unlike what our superintendent is doing. President Cummings.
You got the national president of the AFT coming in, or are they coming in by video?
Correct.
Because she's got a hell of a book out right now.
And she just
Woo!
sent me a copy. I can't wait to read it. Yes, she
Yeah,
did.
so to me, that she really helps paint the vision about public schools in the context of this authoritarian style government, because when it comes to public schools, you really are going to have curriculum that is pushed on people that have nothing to do with the kids, their history, and they're erasing Black history from the books and banning this and that. So we definitely have to be vigilant. What else can we expect, Ray, for tonight?
Well, we have Brother Brown who's coming in person.
Okay.
Somebody called me the other day, and people are always shooting their mouth off. Why didn't people coming from Chicago? And Chicago, I said, well, you haven't heard them. We just invited them to come to share with us what they have faced and what some of their solutions are to add to our conversation, we have to begin to talk about and have conversations about what we want the city to look like and what the educational opportunities should look like along with that. We want to just spark people's minds to think about a rebirth, innovative system. You know, kindergarten was invented right here in St. Louis.
Yes, it was.
Yet we are living in a state that you don't have to go to school until you're in the first grade. And part of the reason why is a lot of these politicians up there, they don't really care about the kids in Jefferson City. They just care about having an education arrow in their quiver to say, I'm good on education. We got a governor that wants to take $50 million and give it to kids to go to religious and private schools because his mama had to work at night and she wasn't at home holding his hand and he can't get over his childhood issues and he's forcing that mess on us. But, you know, we have to understand and come together and talk and listen to others who are able to overcome. It's not going to be lockstep, a clone of whatever they're doing in Chicago or Philly, and things like that. But it will begin to give us hope that there are some alternatives other than just closing this district down while the charter schools are opening. Just like they're closing schools, my good friend Bishop Mike Jones up there just opened a new charter school up there. Nobody's up there trying to see how many kids are in that building. Like they snoop around the buildings and they're not at capacity. Is he at capacity? Who cares? I know this. Charter schools are moving into the areas in which we're closing our schools. Do they know something we don't know? Are they going to be part of the new renaissance of St. Louis at some future time? And the public system is being moved out. It doesn't make sense to me. If we're closing down, why are they opening up?
Exactly right, Ray, because that's I mean, the way that you explain it is the whole reason for this radio show, because we try to connect the dots, connect the issues, the people who are working on similar issues, so that we don't have to learn in a vacuum. We can learn from each other, and there's plenty of learning to be done. A couple of weeks ago, we had people had a show specifically on the anniversary of Katrina, and one of the things we talked about was the school district, which on the day after the storm, they pretty much fired the whole damn district. And so those folks were there. Their message to us is, don't let that happen. We know that you all had the tornado. Be vigilant about that, or they'll turn your district. So we're learning from each other. It's no sense of us having to repeat history or reinvent the wheel. And we also had some folks on here from Chicago who, particularly Abdul Muhammad, who was one of the black male principals who got fired. So some white woman who could be a part of the school that was a high achieving school, she wanted to be a part of that, and they basically kicked him out so that she could do that. So the struggles are many, and in many cases they're the similar struggles, so we can really learn from each other. So I've heard Brother G2 before. He's got some knowledge, he's got some experience. I think he can help inform whatever is going on here. So I welcome all of the voices coming in. We need all the help we can get here. I want to thank CJ and who's with the state AFT and Ray Cummins, and we should make sure we see them tonight. Next week, as I said, we're going to be talking about Gaza, and we got folks who are going to help us understand what's going on and how we could better support it. We need to put some tighten up the screws around, the person who's letting all our money flow over there into the billions to help with that genocide.
And
And also,
one
there's
last thing,
so much going on, you all, in St. Louis. Go ahead. Yeah.
if I could. I'm blunt at what I had to say. We don't need some outsider coming in here that's going to use our schools as a stepping stone to their next job. This person is not going to stay here. What she's going to do is, if she can achieve her mission and close as many schools as she can, that's going to go on her resume. And as you said, all over the country, they're facing decreasing enrollment. And she's just going to sell herself off of the chaos and decimation that she causes this community. We can solve our own problem. And the first step is to begin to educate ourselves. And that's what these education summits are about.
So we'll see people tonight. Again, I was about to say there's a lot going on in the month of October, this kicking off. And so I'm trying to get as much as that up on my website, jamalarogers.com. And also, if you missed some of the programs, previous programs, you can also download it there. We are behind in the video portions. The audios get up pretty quickly. The video portions, I'm working with my webmaster to make sure that gets up on the YouTube channel. But you know, it's a lot going on. And we're gonna kick it off tonight with the education town hall about our kids and it's a lot, y'all. It is a lot. So let's remember what we're here for, who we're here for, and it's all about the kids. This is Jamala Rogers, your host of Voices from the Battlefield, and I hope to see you on the battlefield. Thank you for listening.
Right now.